Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School, the podcast where you get fresh insight from leaders at top tech companies and startups. Remember, you can learn product management in person at our 15 campuses worldwide or study with us online. Visit productschool.com to learn more about our courses. You can also hang out with the leaders from these podcasts at our hundreds of annual events and catch us at ProductCon, the world's largest PM conference that takes place every year across the United States and in London.
Chapter 5. From Idea to Action. Finding and validating the right opportunity to work on next has gotten you to the starting line of the product development life cycle. Now, we need to run the race and actually build the product. In this chapter, we'll look at how to transition from an opportunity to something actionable. And in chapters 6 through 8, we'll dive into the entire get it built and launched process. Fundamentally, this chapter is about an important PM soft skill, communication, and how to effectively communicate, discuss, and finalize the opportunity you've found with key stakeholders. Why new ideas struggle. A product manager's job includes anticipating what might cause the product to flop and addressing that risk up front. The biggest reason new products struggle isn't a technical reason. It's because customers don't want or need the product you end up building. In other words, it happens because you don't achieve product market fit. Fortunately, there are things you can do to give your product the best possible chance of success. Taking steps to validate your idea, like we went over in Chapter 4, will help get your product started the right way, as you'll have made sure there will be some need for your product or feature. From this point, we'll say product for simplicity. But numerous issues that might crop up and prevent your finished product from achieving product market fit as you go from idea that we believe customers want to released product. It's your job to anticipate and prevent these issues before they cause harm to your product. Here's an example. What if there's a hidden barrier you never learned about or addressed that prevents customers from using your product? Remember the Kanno model from Chapter 3? There are often basic expectations that a customer won't explicitly mention, but if your product is missing those features, the customer will be unhappy and might not even use it. Imagine if you booked a hotel room and there was no bed, or toilet paper, or sink. Would you stay, or would you immediately go to another hotel? Early test phases with key customers as you build your product can help make sure you don't miss a hidden barrier. But hidden barriers are just one thing that might prevent you from achieving product or market fit. Other obstacles include the following. It takes you so long to build and release your product that your customers' needs have changed or they found a better solution. Your product has so many features, new customers can't figure out how to use it, quickly getting frustrated and abandoning it. Or, if you're adding a new feature to an existing product, perhaps it ends up being hidden where no one finds it. The product's value wasn't even clear in the first place, and customers didn't purchase it because they didn't realize it would address their needs. To be fair, you won't be able to anticipate every possible obstacle, nor does anyone expect you to. That's what iteration is about. However, as you start to build your product, there are steps you can take that will give your product the best chance of success possible. These steps start with writing a few key documents that will help you clearly establish your goals and desired outcomes, create empathy for your customers, and allow for clear communication with stakeholders. Those traits combine to help you and your team make smart decisions as you build your product, giving it the best chance of success. Working backwards by imagining the future. Building something new involves imagining the future and making it happen. We frequently find it useful to start development on a new product by describing what the world will be like when the product's done. Imagine you're writing a science fiction story about a near future world with your product. There are two great Imagine the Future documents to try writing before anyone's written a line of code. These documents are a press release and a product review. Amazon often has its product managers write a press release when starting development. But press releases are internally focused, and they cover how you imagine talking about the product when it's done. Writing the product review you want to receive before starting development forces you to think about how you want the product to be perceived externally when it's done. Both of these documents are useful to write, as they help answer key questions up front and help communicate with key stakeholders. When you start to build a new product, writing these documents forces you to take your product ideas out of your head and get them down on paper, making it much easier to share your ideas with other stakeholders. Furthermore, writing down your ideas will help ensure that you have initial answers for important product questions like, what are the key features customer will care about that we'll want to promote? Over time, as you build out the product, come back to the review and the press release and update them whenever you're at a critical decision point. How do these documents change if you choose not to build a specific feature, for example? If you're unhappy with how your review is changing, what can you do to get it back on a good track? Writing an internal future press release. While not the most fun prose-wise to write, writing a press release before you start product development forces you to explicitly write down your target market, the problem you're addressing, how you're solving it, and the key features of the solution, succinctly, in less than a page. Sharing the press release with stakeholders, including the engineering and design leads, will also help you start to uncover any internal barriers and figure out what questions you need to answer before the team can start fully building this product. Perhaps this product relies on building a new piece of technology, and you need the engineering team's help to build a prototype to see if it's even technically feasible. You'll need to find time on their schedule, and that prototype will be a milestone towards the overall project, affecting the release date even before you've started planning the project. Writing a press release will also help you start to determine how you communicate the product's value to customers, along with how customers will find and get started using the product. You'll likely change both of those as you actually build the product, but thinking about them up front helps address two major reasons products flop. Furthermore, it's one final validation step to make sure this is really what you want to do next. If you're not excited to write this press release and no one is excited to read it, are you working on the right opportunity? Is there something else you would be excited to write and excited for customers to read? Similarly, ask yourself if the product described in the press release really will help you reach your goals. You could try writing a press release as if you achieved your goal. For example, if your goal is to grow your engaged customer base to a certain target number, write a press release about how you've hit that milestone and the role this product played in hitting it. If the press release feels contrived or very hard to write, then perhaps this product isn't the right thing to build to help you achieve your goals. A basic product press release usually includes these elements. Headline. If you were to tell your friend about this product in a sentence, what would you say? Included in that is the key target market, how it helps them win, and a tentative product name that the target market can understand. Sometimes you'll need two sentences, in which case you should write a headline and a subheading. Summary paragraph. The first full paragraph in your press release should call out the most important aspects of the product and how it solves the customer's problem. Imagine you're reading this press release on Flipboard or Apple News. Most people will read only this first paragraph, so it needs to be concise but complete. Problem and solution. The next section should elaborate on the problem and your solution in more detail. Spokesperson quote. Include a quote from you, the product manager, about how this product is great for your customers. It's fine to include this in the solution text. Customer quote. Include a quote from a fictional customer about how the product fits into his life. Conclusion, how to get started. Explain how new customers can find, sign up, buy, or use this product and pull everything together with a call to action. If you find you need to write more to help make your thoughts about the product clear, especially around issues that relate internally to your company and how you'll get the product built rather than around issues related to the customer, then also write a product FAQ document. Writing a review. The other Imagine the future document you might want to write at the start of the project, especially for a major new version of a product or a brand new product, is the review you want your product to receive. Imagine if Recode, or whomever is appropriate, were reviewing the released version of your product. What would they say? In a press release, you think about how you want to talk about your product, but a review forces you to think about what customers will hear and how they'll experience the product. Therefore, this is where you need to be honest about what trade-offs you're willing to make with the product. Maybe your product will be amazing, but also pricier than the competitors. The reviewers will call this out. Are you okay with that? If not, and you start taking steps to reduce its price, what trade-offs will occur? Will you need more customers to make up for lost revenue? Is that achievable? Will you need to reduce the feature set? What impact would that have on the review? Similarly, what parts of your product do you think a reviewer will focus on, and which will they ignore? The parts you discuss the most are the parts where you'll later spend most of your design and engineering effort. Most importantly, the review should have a conclusion about why a customer should buy your product, especially over competitors or whatever the customer is doing now. This conclusion should reflect the unique, differentiating value your product offers. If it's something minor, such as identical features at a slightly lower cost, then your product might struggle to stand out. If a competitor has a sale, there's suddenly no difference in your products, and you'll be seen as a copycat. Writing that conclusion will force you to connect the concepts in the previous three chapters. What are your company's core competencies? How do these connect to this opportunity? For example, especially at first, Google Docs was much more limited than Microsoft Word. But it was cloud-based, collaborative, and platform-agnostic, in addition to being free. Those three factors are how Google used its strengths to build a differentiated word processor. If it had been a free app you downloaded and installed on your Mac or PC, a review would have concluded that it was very limited free word processor, and that's it. That product wouldn't have taken advantage of Google's strengths. Just like your press release, your review should be concise. Most product reviews don't exhaustively look at every feature. They give customers enough information to help them know what problem the product solves, if it solves the problem well, what trade-offs the product has, and if they should buy the product. Defining a minimum viable product. Clearly defining the MVP you want to ship and working backwards to determine how to achieve it is another way to help set your product up for success. In Chapter 4, we talked about using one type of MVP, simple ones hacked together and not built like the actual product, to validate your opportunity hypothesis. Now, let's look at MVPs from a "what will we actually build" perspective. As you wrote your press release and product review, you were forced to pick out the most important parts of your product to talk about. The single most important aspect of your product, the one that delivers the real value for your customers, is the starting point to define the MVP. You'll prioritize building that part first, and at some companies, that will also be the initial product you release. Before we go further, let's clear up a big misconception about MVPs. Minimum doesn't mean bad. Your product is still going to be designed and engineered well, tested thoroughly, and most importantly, it will deliver value to the user. It should be a product that people are willing to buy and use. Even if it's not fully featured, it should work well enough that it becomes your customer's go-to solution. Imagine a product that has only one button. It's easy for customers to use this product because their only option is to press a button. Now, imagine you add a second button. Suddenly, the product is a lot harder to use because customers have to choose which button to push. Every button or feature you add increases the friction for customers. It makes them have to think more about what they're doing. Minimum simply means the fewest buttons or features you need to build to deliver the most important value. This prevents you from building features that no one ends up using, or worse, making the product so complex a customer doesn't use it at all. In an ideal world with lean methodology, you'll release your MVP to real customers and then determine what to do next based on what they're actually doing with the product and what limitations they encounter. In other words, you're always just building MVPs and iterating. Unfortunately, we often end up in non-ideal situations where we iterate less frequently, like building a major new version of our product, and we'll be expected to ship more than just the pure MVP. In these cases, defining the MVP will help you prioritize the pieces you absolutely have to build to deliver on the product. For the beyond MVP features, rather than arbitrarily picking features to build, test your MVP with key customers before release. Then, use their feedback to figure out what extra features to prioritize. Even though the end release will be more than an MVP, this approach helps you use an MVP internally effectively. So, how do you come up with your MVP? Using your press release and product reviews as a guide, let's make a list about your product. 1. Write down the overall thing you're doing and why you're doing it. That is, what value will it deliver for your customers and what goal will it help you achieve? Explicitly put this statement at the top. 2. List the features you think you need to achieve that top-level goal, along with why that feature's important. Rather than just writing Cloud Data Store, write Cloud Data Store so that customers can access their data from any device. Now here's the kicker. As you work on this step, you're not allowed to add any new feature category not listed in the press release and product review. You'll define each feature in more detail, e.g., you might need a way to log in so that people can access your service and a way to reset passwords. But you can't add something major. For example, if you wrote a fictional press release about the iPhone 5S and never mentioned Touch ID, you can't suddenly list Touch ID as part of the MVP. Whether you realize it or not, writing the press release and review helped you prioritize the most important parts of your product, which in turn helps define the MVP. 3. Go through your feature list and cross out whatever items customers don't actually require to address their core need. This step is the really hard part. MVPs should be uncomfortable. You, as the product manager, should feel like the MVP is not feature-rich enough, but there should be enough functionality that customers can accomplish their goals. For example, even though two-factor authentication is more secure, is it really critical to your customer, or can it have a lower priority? Eliminating features might even eliminate certain personas from using your product. That's okay, as long as it doesn't prevent your key target market from using the product. If your product is very risky, such as relying on technology engineering hasn't built yet, you might even define a single-use case MVP, which can be used by only one persona for one situation, a risky one. If the MVP works for the key market, then over time, you can build the needed features to support more personas. By the time you're done, you should have what you believe is a clearly defined MVP, along with explanations about why each feature is part of the MVP. MVPs, plussing, and the Kano model. We love MVPs because they let you focus on delivering a product your customers want and will use. But remember, minimum doesn't mean bad. You need to be continuously seeking ways to make sure what you're doing is great. In Chapter 3, we talked about the Kano model, and we introduced the idea of delighter features, features that customers don't ask for, but that deliver a huge return in customer satisfaction. As you're defining your MVP, it's easy to inadvertently dismiss delighter features as non-essential work. After all, customers aren't explicitly asking for them. But it's your job as a PM to advocate and to keep these features part of the MVP when possible, as they're critical to building innovative, differentiated products that your customers love. To help you think about these features, we want to share an idea from Walt Disney. He came up with the idea of plussing, which is simply finding ways to make a good idea great and to deliver beyond what people expect. Sound familiar? Disney historian Les Perkins tells a story from the early days of Disneyland. Walt was holding a Christmas parade, which cost $350,000. His accountants begged him not to spend that money because people would already be in the park. Walt's reply was, "That's just the point. We should do the parade precisely because no one's expecting it. Our goal at Disneyland is to always give the people more than they expect. As long as we keep surprising them, they'll keep coming back. But if they ever stop coming, it'll cost us 10 times that to get them to come back." To this day, the Walt Disney Company's culture has integrated plussing in everything they do. At a park, a cast member might go out of his way to unexpectedly help your family skip a long line, and this unexpected delight makes your day even more awesome. The sunken ship and shark's explosion sequence in Finding Nemo was a lot of fun, and the final shot with two birds sitting on the water completely plusses it. We're not going to spoil the surprise in case you haven't seen it. The results of continuously delivering more than people expect in both revenue and customer satisfaction speak for themselves. When you're defining your MVP, an extra filter as you're cutting potential features is to ask, does this plus the core idea? If it really does, spend some extra time considering if it should be cut or not. Conversely, if you're struggling to find ways to define delighter ideas, ask yourself, how could I plus this? While plussing is arguably not fully in line with lean thinking, you'll likely discover that plussing your initial MVP is key to building products that customers don't just use, but also love. Next, let's look at how to effectively discuss the MVP and the project as a whole with other stakeholders. Communicating via a product requirements document. One of the most important tools to help you communicate is a well-written Products Requirements Document, PRD. A PRD is an explanation of the specific product you're building. It clearly explains why you're building this product, both for your internal goals and for your customers, along with the exact scope, the features, and functionality of the product. Similarly, it should convey what you're not building. For better or worse, PRDs have become a controversial topic in the product management world. In very waterfall-oriented companies, a PM will spend a long time writing a very detailed PRD. These huge documents, often 20 pages or more, specify every aspect of a product up front. They are difficult to read and they are essentially immutable once finished. This is what the team is going to implement no matter what. Advocates of lean methodology use the PRD as an example of everything wrong with waterfall development. Specifically, they believe in quick iteration and using knowledge to plan what to do next, and long and detailed specifications for what you'll do are contrary to that approach. We believe that a PRD, if done well, is a fantastic communication tool, and we're going to help you create effective ones that others will read. Furthermore, we view a PRD as a living document. You'll update it as the project progresses, documenting changes in scope along with key decisions and fleshing it out with relevant information like user design tests. Unlike when product management first emerged and people created detailed PRDs before a project began, we believe that the PRD is finished only when the product's released. The PRD is a tool for everyone involved in the product. At first, you'll use it to get all the key stakeholders on the same page and help the team understand the project. Having an initial PRD can be reassuring and inspire confidence in your project, as it's clear to others in the company that you have an idea for where to take the project. We believe that, throughout the project, the PRD should be the project's homepage, or at least the very first link on the project's homepage. As you near release, your support and sales team will use it to find out everything they need to know about the product. And when you're done, it's a historical reference for why you made certain decisions. We should mention that you won't need a PRD, or an imaginary press release or product review, for every opportunity you pursue. A bug fix, for example, won't need a PRD. There's no exact division as to when you do and don't need to write a PRD. Our recommendation is to write one for any opportunity that is more of a project, involving communication between various teams and potential confusion, rather than a clear, small change. Let's look at what goes into a PRD and how to use it as a communications tool. Breaking down a PRD. These are the key sections in a PRD. Title. Give this project a distinct name. Change history. Provide a description of each important change to the PRD, including who changed it, when, and in what specific way. Overview. Briefly, what is this project about? Why are you doing it? Objectives. What will this let the customer do? What are our high-level internal goals for doing this project? Success metrics. What are the success metrics that indicate you're achieving your internal goals for the project? Messaging. What's the product messaging marketing will use to describe this product to customers, both new and existing? Timeline or release planning. What's the overall schedule you're working towards? Personas. Who are the target personas for this product, and which is the key persona? User scenarios. These are full stories about how various personas will use the product in context. Requirements, features in. These are the distinct, prioritized features along with a short explanation as to why the features are important. Features out. What have you explicitly decided not to do and why? Designs. Include any needed early sketches and link to the actual designs once they're available. Open issues. What factors do you still need to figure out? Q&A. What are common questions about the product and answers to those questions? This is a good place to note key decisions. Other considerations. This is a catch-all for anything else, such as if you make a key decision to remove or add to the project's scope. The exact form of a PRD varies company to company, but the overall content is similar. Let's dig into each section in more detail. Title and change history. The PRD's header contains a title, which is a unique, identifying name for the project. This might be a code name, or it might be something simple like Mover Web App for the first version. The change history is just a way to quickly tell if there's new information so that readers don't have to reread the entire document, only to find out nothing's changed. Some wiki tools have automatic change tracking widgets, so if you're writing your PRD online, this section is automatically written for you. Overview and objectives. Next, you write an overview paragraph that will be very similar to the first paragraph of the press release you wrote. It will describe what this project is and why you're doing it now. You'll also create a short, bulleted list explicitly listing what you want the customer to get out of this project and what internal goals you're trying to achieve, your objectives. Success metrics. You'll also explicitly list the most important success metrics, the key performance indicators that you will need to be able to measure to figure out if you've achieved your goals. As you start to write the PRD, you might find you have a general sense of your goals, increase the number of users, but not necessarily a detailed goal, increase our user base by 10%. Write whatever you can and add some placeholder indicator like question marks if you're not certain or need to more clearly define something. You'll also call out this uncertainty in the open issues section. New PMs often make the mistake of listing every possible metric they could measure. Instead, focus on the key success metrics you want to watch for, and later in the PRD, as part of the features section or within the Q&A, list the specific metrics you want to measure that will affect the success metrics. Messaging. Messaging is how you'll explain the product to a current or new customer in a short sentence, and we'll cover it more in Chapter 8. It's quite likely that your product messaging won't be clearly defined at the start of the project. Take a stab at writing something, indicate it's tentative or uncertain if it is, and add figuring out the exact messaging to the open issues section. Timeline release planning. Even though you're most likely not acting as a project manager and owning the project schedule, you'll want to include some rough timing information here and eventually provide a link to the full schedule. Maybe your marketing and sales team want to release the product for a holiday push. This means it needs to be for sale by mid-November. Knowing that date might significantly impact your development planning and how much you're able to build and test in time. Personas. Call out the key personas this product is intended for. If you have personas defined elsewhere, link to the full personas and remind the reader of the key traits in the PRD. If they're not fully defined elsewhere, define them here so a reader understands what the eventual customers will be like and their goals. User scenarios and storytelling. Now, we come to the secret sauce of our PRD format, user scenarios. We believe user scenarios will help you write PRDs a cut above everyone else's, making people want to read them. In a user scenario, you'll combine personas, customer development, and empathy to write full paragraph stories about how your customers will use your product in different scenarios. Stories are the oldest form of entertainment we have, and scientists have argued that narrative experiences are the basis for far more of our lives than systematic logic. Think about the last bad presentation you saw. Chances are the presenter had slides chock full of bullet points and just read each one. After 3 minutes, you were checking your email, daydreaming about being anywhere but in that seat. And when you looked at the bottom of his slides and saw 3 of 101, you started praying for a fire to get out of the room. Poorly presented content can make even the most fascinating of subjects boring. Conversely, think about a TED Talk. These presenters easily hold your attention for 15 to 20 minutes and make you want to hear more. Each starts with the presenter sharing a personal detail about her life, and the slides, if there are any, are images with no text. Instead of reading bullets, we listen to the world the presenter crafts for us and imagine ourselves in it. TED Talks are formatted as stories, and these stories engage our brains. There's scientific evidence that our brains are wired to think in stories, not lists of bullets. Scientists have found that just reading a list of bullet points activates the language processing parts of the brain, Broca's area and Wernicke's area. But when we read a story, areas in the brain that we'd use when experiencing the events are activated too. If we read about a person walking down the street, the same parts of the brain that activate when we walk down the street will activate. Stories let us imagine another's experience. One of the big reasons a product manager needs to communicate effectively is to make everyone on the team empathetic with the customers so that they can clearly understand the customer's needs and how the product fits into his life. Writing stories to talk about the customer and the product you're building is the most effective way to help your team empathize with the customer because it makes your team's brains behave as if they're the customer, implicitly communicating the results of your customer development work. Storytelling also provides a way to take vague opportunities and raw data and make sense of it. When we're young, we're taught that there's one right answer to a problem. 2 + 2 = 4. Even in English class, we're taught to write to one right answer. Write an intro, hypothesis, supporting data, and conclusion. The way most schools work are a relic of preparing students to work on assembly lines, where there's only one way to do each task. Product management isn't like that. We have a lot of seemingly disconnected data that we have to weave together to create a product narrative. And there's not always one perfectly clear right answer for every problem. Instead, we want to focus on the customer's underlying needs and motivations to make sure whatever answers design and engineering come up with will solve the problem. Stories are an effective way to give meaning to data and to express that need in an understandable way. They'll let us imagine a world that doesn't exist and think about the steps we'll take to get there, which is also useful when crafting a product roadmap. Writing user scenarios is a great way to turn a list of customer needs and product requirements into a format that others will understand and want to read. Storytelling will help you not only craft great PRDs, but also give effective presentations, explain your product clearly, and more. Crafting great stories. Fortunately, good stories aren't hard to write. By reading books, watching movies, and just being human, you already implicitly know how to tell a great story. Let's make that knowledge explicit. All stories have a similar structure. They first give you context. They set up the world. For a user scenario, who's the persona? Remind us quickly about the customers that persona represents. What situation is he in? What are the key details we need to know? Is he in his car? Holding a baby? The transition from the setup to the next part of the story, action, is the inciting incident. The inciting incident is when conflict shows up. What problem causes the persona to need your product or to need a specific feature in your product if he was already using it in the setup? Why does he think to use your product? If he's a new customer, how will he find or buy your product? Now is the action section. This is where stuff happens. When the persona is using the product, what's he doing? What happens as he tries to use it? What roadblocks or conflicts does he encounter while trying to use the product, and what product features help him eliminate those roadblocks? In a user scenario, this is where you'll justify why various other features are important. Finally, what's the result? Now that he's addressed his need, how does his world change? It's fine if it's a small change. Not every product is saving the world. Having scratched his itch with the Acme back scratcher, Jeff puts his back scratcher down within easy reach, knowing it's the perfect tool to scratch his back. Hopefully, you see how even that simple result implies that we'll achieve a customer satisfaction or engagement goal in the end. Setup, action, result. That's it. The challenge is in the execution. As you write the story, include the relevant details to help a reader imagine the situation you're describing. But just like when writing personas, you don't need to include every possible detail. If you're not sure what to include, start by writing a detailed story and then begin eliminating details. If the overall meaning doesn't change, and the customer need or how the product addresses it is still clear, then you likely don't need those details. Write your stories so that if a customer in your target persona were to read it, she'd go, "I've been in that situation before, and this product sounds fantastic." Also, your customers likely don't know your jargon, so avoid using it as much as possible. This will also help other stakeholders to understand the story clearly. There'll be no ambiguity because you use jargon they don't recognize. Lastly, as we've mentioned before, be authentic. You want your stories to be real and believable, as that will help you figure out your potential weaknesses, both in terms of execution and where your customer might encounter friction. Once you know your weaknesses, you can take steps to address them. Like product management, crafting great stories is easy to learn but can take a lifetime to master. Keep using stories for your PRDs, presentations, and more, and you'll become a better and better storyteller. Writing user scenarios. In a PRD, you'll likely write multiple user scenarios covering different personas in their use cases. Your MVP definition will help you figure out the most important stories to write and what features to focus on in those stories. Each use case or major aspect of a use case will be one user scenario. If you find yourself not mentioning features that are on your MVP list, adjust your list accordingly. Everything in your MVP list should be in the user scenarios, but not every feature called out in the user scenarios will be part of the MVP. If you narrate how each feature will help the user win, that is, how will customers use it to address their problems, you'll make the feature's value clear to your readers. For new products or features, don't forget about the onboarding part of the user scenario. How will a customer first encounter this product and learn to use it? There are three key tips to keep in mind when writing user scenarios. First, remember that your goal is to make readers feel like they're sitting next to each persona, using the product in each scenario. Provide the relevant detail so that readers know what's going on in the customer's life when they use the product, but don't drown the reader in unnecessary detail. Second, you want these stories to be as truthful as you can imagine, as being authentic will help you get the best possible understanding of your customer so that you can make smart product decisions. We're reiterating this because it's that important. If one of your product requirements is a 100-page user manual, is that reasonable? When was the last time you read a product manual? Why should we believe the characters in your user scenario will read a long manual? We once read a PRD where each user scenario ended with, "And then the customer tells all her friends about the product and everyone buys it." While it's nice to have a happy ending, that wasn't authentic about what people actually did. Instead, try to be realistic about what impact each persona's product use will have related to your goal. A realistic statement is, "Because this is an ongoing problem, and the customer was so happy with our trial product, she signed up for the monthly plan." Being authentic can also help you eliminate unnecessary product features. If you find yourself trying to force what you thought was a key feature into the story, that's a great hint that the feature isn't essential. Last, do not define in too much detail or be too prescriptive about what the solution entails. As we'll discuss more later, we want to leave the PRD focused on goals and requirements rather than specific solutions to a problem. Design and engineering will figure out the right solution to help the customer achieve her goals and to meet your requirements. For example, rather than describing how a customer turns a doorknob on a restroom door to leave, describe how the customer exits the restroom with clean hands. Maybe design will conclude that using her foot to open the door is a much better solution than a doorknob in this case. Being prescriptive to design or engineering is an easy way to get those teams annoyed with you. You need to trust them to do their jobs. Requirements or features in, features out. Next up in the PRD structure is a feature list, which is sometimes also called a list of requirements, or, more confusingly, user stories. These are not actually stories. This section is a list of what features you're going to build into the product, ideally with some rough prioritizing around essential, really want, and nice to have. You already have the basis for this, your MVP definition list. Each of the items on your MVP list should be prioritized as essential. Your user scenarios will provide the rest of the list. Go back through them and explicitly break down the pros into tasks. Note that the prioritization labels aren't set in stone. As you develop the product and share early versions with customers for feedback, your feature prioritization will likely change. It's okay if you don't have the full knowledge for how to break down the top-level tasks into specific subtasks. When you share the PRD with the design and engineering leads, you can work with them to break down each item into more specific user stories. Just like the user scenarios, you'll want to avoid being prescriptive and instead focus on goals and requirements. An easy way to do that is to write each item in this format. As a persona, I want specific feature goal, so that reason. Some PMs prefer to use the given when then format. Given some context, when some action is done, then a set of observable behaviors happens. While given when then makes it easier than other ways of writing requirements to tell when the user story is implemented completely, be careful as the when and then blocks can easily become prescriptive. Regardless of what format you choose for your user stories, it should be clear what the feature will do and how to measure success or proper implementation of the feature. We found it also useful to explicitly list features out, that is, what you're not doing and why. For one, multiple readers might ask about adding a feature supporting a use case, and this preempts the question. Second, if you choose to reduce the scope of the product and cut out a feature, you will note the feature, that decision, and the date on this list. This list can also be a source of inspiration for the next product iteration. It's also a great place to write down suggestions others give you that don't fit into the current scope so that the people who made the suggestions feel like you listened to their feedback. Designs. Having defined the product's requirements, in the design section you'll start to look at the solutions. Even though you don't want to be prescriptive, sometimes it's effective to create a low-quality, high-level napkin sketch of a possible design to help everyone understand what you're talking about. A picture can be worth a thousand words. The design section is the place to include those sketches. We'll cover working with the design team in the next chapter, but we recommend making these sketches very rough so the designers don't think you're trying to do their job. And even if you were a designer before becoming a product manager, you'll want to make your sketches rough. You need to trust that the design team will do a better job designing a solution than you will. You'll add links to the actual designs as they become available. Open issues, Q&A, and other considerations. The last few sections in the PRD are a catch-all. Especially on your first draft, there are likely some parts of the project you're unsure of. From what your specific success metric goals are, to if you should include a use case or not. Note these questions under open issues. As you discuss your PRD with others, you'll find some common questions come up again and again. Include a Q&A to provide the answers. If you created a product Q&A to go with a press release, you might already have a good start to this section. The Q&A is also a great place to address edge cases. How will you handle them? The last part of the PRD is a general other section in case something comes up that doesn't fit anywhere else. As you write the PRD, we recommend including all of these headers, even if the only content is nothing yet, so that they're there when you need them. Using a PRD. Now that you have a PRD, here's how to use it to get stakeholder buy-in and as a tool for communication with your team or company. We recommend you write the first draft of your PRD in a private format, such as a Word doc or a non-public Google Doc. It will change the most in the first few drafts, and you don't want someone stumbling upon it and panicking. You'll define the core of the product in these early drafts, and you want to make sure everything on the page is coming from the work you've done to identify, validate, and scope the opportunity. After you've written it, you'll start sharing it with others for feedback. Even though you'll want to listen and address their feedback collaboratively, remember that product isn't designed by committee. You're the person responsible for the product, and you should approach these discussions from a perspective of, this is what I believe is right, did I miss anything? As opposed to, what do you think we should build? However, this does not mean you should approach this sharing process as just telling people, this is what we're building, now go do it. You want to solicit and address feedback, both to make the product better and to keep your relationship with various stakeholders productive and respectful. The first people to share your PRD with are leads and fellow product managers. People who have been at the company longer, have experience with the product, or have more experience in general might have valuable insight to make the product, or the path to getting it built, better. Once your team is on board, engage the other key stakeholders, such as the design and engineering leads. Again, view this as a conversation. You're seeking their feedback, and you'll incorporate their thoughts into the PRD. Perhaps the engineering manager will note a technical issue you need to figure out, and you'll add that to the open issues section. Or maybe the design lead will have an idea for a solution that changes the technical scope. Maybe the marketing lead will really want you to have something for a certain release date. They might also ask you to break down one of your user stories into more detail to make the project's scope explicitly clear. Sometimes you hear people say that a PM owns the problem, design owns the solution, and engineering implements it. We found a much better approach is to define the problem and generate solutions together. You, the PM, might take the first stab at the problem's definition, but that doesn't mean what you write is perfect, and that design doesn't have valid input. Similarly, if you used to be an engineer, perhaps you'll have a valuable insight as to how engineering could implement a solution. When conflicts arise, remember your core role and focus on the product's requirements, not how to build it. A lot of conflict comes about when someone tries to do someone else's job, such as a PM trying to design the solution or a designer wanting to change the product's scope. After discussing the PRD with this group, you should all be in agreement about what you're trying to build and why, along with what your key success metrics are. You should have a basic idea about if the product is feasible, with the defined scope and on the desired timeline. You'll also likely come up with various questions and answers for the Q&A section, and the other leads might have ideas that impact the user scenarios and feature list. Now is the time to start sharing the PRD more boldly. If you have an internal wiki, move the PRD to a wiki page and make that the product's homepage, or at the very least, link to it from the product's homepage. Start sharing the PRD with the teams who will be working on it. Make sure to incorporate their feedback, as people in the weeds day-to-day often have valuable practical insights. Last, it's quite possible that you'll be asked to share the PRD with a broader group, be it at a company all-hands meeting, or even at a board meeting. In this situation, don't read the PRD or your user scenarios to the audience verbatim. Instead, distill the PRD down to the essence of what you're doing and why, and present that information to the group. The press release you wrote can be a great guide. It's okay to call out specific things to make the project's scope clear, but try to leave plenty of time for questions. And while you're sharing the PRD with broader audiences, the design and engineering teams are starting to actually work on the product. In the next couple of chapters, we'll look at how you'll work with them to shepherd the product. Chapter 5 Tip. This tip is from Mike Belsito. Mike is the co-founder of Product Collective, the company behind Industry the Product Conference. Mike has spent more than a decade in executive and product management roles at various early-stage technology companies. Mike is also author of Startup Seed Funding for the Rest of Us, is a contributor at rocketship.fm, and serves as an adjunct professor of design and innovation at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. Using experiential immersion to prepare your team. Communication with your internal product organization is perhaps one of the most overlooked yet important factors that determines the success of your product. As product managers, it's easy to focus on the customer-facing side of defining the initial problem, and then, later, actually overseeing the build-out of the solution. But the portion of work and preparation in between can be the difference between a product properly launching to address the actual problem and going off track before the build-out even begins. Clearly defining the problem and requirements through well-organized documentation, as described in this chapter, is one way to properly prepare your team. Consider supplementing your documentation with an experiential immersion with your entire team. An experiential immersion is simply finding a real-world experience that your entire team can go through together that will allow you all to really live through the problem you're solving for. Even if your team members are generally not your target market and aren't who you're designing your solution for, you should all become method actors and live as if you were. In the case of Mover, your team could actually become a moving company for a day. Set up a simulated office for your moving company. Assign roles to different people, including those who play the customer. Spend a couple of hours doing the type of back-office work that you might envision at a mover client moving company. If the mover team were to go through this experiential immersion, they might start to get an even keener understanding of why the problem they're solving for needs to be addressed. Or even better, it might bring up serious questions about whether any of your core assumptions about the problem you're solving for should be considered. How to do this? 1. As a team, pick the core problem that you feel you're ultimately solving for. 2. Identify a customer persona that experiences this problem often. 3. Create a scenario where your team can act and simulate actually being the customer experiencing the problem. 4. Allow your team to live through this problem together for a while, at least a couple of hours. 5. Discuss as a team what it felt like to live the problem and whether any of your core assumptions have been even further validated or need to be readdressed. Mover.io's documents. After validating the idea we came up with in Chapter 3, that Mover should add in-app messaging so that customers don't have to play phone tag with moving companies, we're going to clearly define our ideas. We'll do so by writing an imaginary press release, working on an MVP list, and then writing the PRD. Sample press release. Move on your schedule with Mover's latest update. The leading app-based moving service now provides easy in-app communication with moving companies. Mover, the iPhone app bringing moving into the smartphone age, is proud to release its latest update. This update removes the need to exchange phone calls and emails with moving companies, completely digitizing the moving experience. Rather than having to schedule a phone call and email photos back and forth, with Mover, you can now message with each moving company in-app, dealing with questions and contracts at your convenience to finish planning your move. Since its release 6 months ago, Mover has transformed urban moving. Instead of having to search out moving companies, call them, and deal with an annoying game of phone tag just to get an accurate bid, Mover brings moving companies to you. Enter a few details about your home and when you want to move, and moving companies will compete for your business with bids appearing in-app. The latest update simplifies the process by providing in-app messaging with each moving company so that you can share photos and address your home's unique traits. This new feature ensures accountability and lets Mover guarantee that the bid you receive is the price you pay. Project manager Jane Doe believes, "In-app messaging is the biggest win for customers since we released Mover. It means you can provide answers to the moving company's questions when you're home at night, thinking about the move, instead of having to stress during the day to call the moving company at work between meetings." Recent customer John Smith tried a pre-release version of messaging and started planning the move at 11 p.m., sent photos of the apartment 2 days later at 2 a.m., and moved the next weekend. He went on to share, "This is the third time I've moved, and even though I have more furniture now than ever before, This was the first hassle-free move I've had. Download Mover from the App Store today to get started planning your first hassle-free move. Sample MVP list. Goal: add in-app messaging so that customers can stay in-app and don't have to exchange phone calls or emails with a moving company to get a bid or complete a move. MVP requirements: initiate a conversation with the other party so that I can address questions to provide a more accurate bid or finalize the moving details. See when there are new messages so that I know I have information to deal with. Respond to messages to keep a thread going. Features we removed from Mover's MVP: send documents like photos, videos, and PDFs as attachments to further help avoid email while communicating beyond words. See a history of all communication or attachments with each company for accountability and reference. Sample PRD. Here's what the first version of a PRD for our Mover messaging feature looks like. Notice how we call out an MVP with our prioritized feature list in the PRD, and it's definitely an uncomfortable MVP. However, the PRD doesn't just talk about the MVP features. It talks about a range of features to give a complete view of the product and how the product manager expects customers to use all of the features together. Non-MVP features just have a lower priority in the requirements list. As a product manager, you really hope engineering will be able to do some of the lower priority features to make the overall messaging feature more functionally complete. But as long as you get the highest priority features done, all the personas will be able to achieve their goals, even if it takes a little more work than if every feature were implemented. This also gives you flexibility to release just the MVP version, get feedback, and then adjust what you're working on next, rather than building the entire PRD feature list before considering the product release ready. Title: In-App Messaging. Change history. First version. Overview: our mission is to be the Uber of moving companies, making it convenient to book a move on your smartphone. We've done a great job bringing the first part of moving to your fingertips, finding vendors and getting initial rough bids, but we've found that there's a second part. Despite using Mover, our customers still have to talk on the phone to figure out details, get exact bids, and finalize their moves. That means move prep still has to take place from 9 to 5. We're going to bring the second part of the moving process into the smartphone era by adding in-app messaging. This will make it convenient for our moving companies and customers to interact to plan details, allowing the moving company to message from 9 to 5 and the customer to reply when convenient. Objectives: improve customer satisfaction by continuing to reduce the hassle of moving. Increase revenue by having more completed moves. Success metrics: improve the number of completed moves by a significant margin. What's our precise goal? 10%? Messaging: moving on your schedule. Timeline or release planning: summer is a popular time to move, so we want to have at least the MVP done by May. That gives us about 8 weeks. Ideally, we'll release the MVP by April so that we have an iteration or two of the feature by the time the moving season really starts. Personas: our primary target is Ant Moving, our mid-sized moving company. They're the ones who will have to ask for more information, so we need to make this easier for them than using the phone. Really Busy Rob is our second target, our persona who doesn't mind paying a premium to use app services over traditional services. We'll need to provide an intuitive messaging or notification system so that he doesn't have to look up a help page about how to talk with the moving company. User scenarios: Ant answers a bid. Linda is the office manager at Ant Moving. Ant Moving signed up for Mover when it first became available, and it's given the company a nice bump in its business. Mover is now promoting Ant to potential clients without Ant having to add anything more. Linda is happy with Mover and is willing to be a first adopter on new features to help the business keep growing. Currently, Linda gets an email from Mover when there's a new bid request. The email has the basic information for the bid and a link to the Mover web dashboard. When Linda clicks the link, she's taken to a website that lets her reply to the bid, see its status, unanswered, bid sent, or customer accepted or rejected. She can then link back to a master list of all bid requests received and the status. If the customer accepts the bid, Linda then receives the customer's contact info, and she can call him to finalize details and give a more accurate bid. Although Linda's bids are pretty good, sometimes unexpected things happen. Mover has the standard field for how many stairs are in each location, but it doesn't account for tight staircases you can't fit furniture down, for example. Now, with Mover's latest version, when Linda gets a bid request, she still looks over the basic information and clicks a link to open the dashboard. However, there's a new group on the customer page with messaging information. Since she noticed the customer said he has stairs inside the current unit, Linda uses the messaging tool to ask the customer if he could take a photo of the stairwell and the rooms upstairs with the furniture inside of them so that Linda can look for any potential problems. Rob is the customer booking the move. He receives a notification that there's a new question waiting for him in Mover. He checks it and makes a reminder to take photos when he's home that evening. At home, Rob takes and sends the requested photos to Aunt. The next day, Linda gets an email from Rob via Mover with the requested information. The stairwell looks quite large with no sharp turns, and there's no obnoxious furniture upstairs that could cause a problem. Linda determines her bid, provides it to Rob via the dashboard, and moves on to the next potential customer. Being an office manager at a moving company keeps Linda busy. She appreciates that the new Mover messaging feature lets her not play phone tag with customers, too. Mover archives the conversation so that later, should Rob accept the bid and need to reference his photos, he can look them up on his customer page on the web dashboard. Furthermore, Linda can continue the conversation with Rob since he accepted the bid, finalizing any details. If he'd rejected Ant's bid, Linda could see the previous conversation but not initiate a new conversation. While that means she can't reach out later and offer him a coupon, it also provides her incentive to give Rob the best price up front. Rob answers Ant's questions and asks for insurance information. Living in downtown Metropolis, Rob loves app services. He uses Lyft to get around, rents for his laundry, and more. He's about to move apartments downtown, and he's trying Mover for the first time. After downloading Mover and answering a few questions about his old and new places, he sits back and waits to receive bids. The next day, he gets a notification from Ant Moving asking to see photos of his staircase and upstairs rooms. No worries. He takes the photos that night and sends them in-app to Ant. Ant gives him a bid, and it looks good. However, that afternoon, he gets an email from his landlord, reminding him that moving companies have to meet a certain minimum insurance requirement to comply with the Homeowners Association, HOA, rules, and he has to provide a copy of the company's insurance certificate unless it's an HOA-approved mover. Ugh! Ant isn't on the approved list, but its bid is half the amount of the HOA-approved movers. Rob goes to the open bid section on his app and creates a new message to Ant. He provides them with the requirements, asks if they meet them, and asks if they'd be willing to provide a copy of their insurance information for the HOA if so. Linda at Ant gets the new message notification and is prepared. She's had this request from other clients. She double-checks the numbers, Ant meets them, and she replies with that confirmation. Since she already has a copy of Ant's insurance as a PDF, she attaches it for Rob, too. Rob gets a notification about this reply, and when he checks it, he sees that everything looks good. He even can open and save the PDF attachment. He accepts the bid and sends the insurance PDF to his landlord and the building HOA to get the move process started on their end. Linda promptly sends him the contract PDF. He saves it and signs it using a PDF app on his phone and sends the completed contract back to Linda via Mover's message attachment feature. Rob's excited that this move just got real, and it was easy to organize at a great price thanks to Mover. User stories, features, requirements. P0, the minimum viable product. P1, medium priority. P2, low priority. P0, web dashboard. As Ant Moving Company, I want to initiate a conversation with a potential customer so that I can ask questions to provide a more accurate bid or finalize the moving details. As Ant Moving Company, I want to see that there's a pending message so that I know I need to reply to a potential customer. As Ant Moving Company, I want to read messages so that I know what a customer's asked or sent. As Ant Moving Company, I want to respond to a question so that I can ask follow-up questions and send answers. Mobile app. As Really Busy Rob, I want to receive a notification of a new message or reply so that I know there's a pending message. As Really Busy Rob, I want to be able to read a new message so that I know what the question or answer is. As Really Busy Rob, I want to create a new message so that I can send messages and replies to each moving company. P1, web dashboard. As Ant Moving Company, I want to see my conversation history with each customer separately so that I can easily remember what I talked about with this customer. As Ant Moving Company, I want email notifications of pending messages so that I don't have to log into the dashboard to know a customer just emailed me. Mobile app. As Really Busy Rob, I want to view my conversation history with each company so that I can remember what specifics I discussed with each and to retrieve my contract to sign when it's convenient. P2, web dashboard. As Ant Moving Company, I want to see and save attachments so that I can see any photos a customer has taken of his space or view a signed contract. As Ant Moving Company, I want to respond to a question with my own attachments so that I can send annotated images to request measurements or send contracts. As Ant Moving Company, I want to see attachments in my conversation history so that I don't have to manually save and organize every attachment a customer sends. Mobile app. As Really Busy Rob, I want to send attachments so that I can quickly send a photo of my space and stuff rather than trying to describe it, along with returning signed contracts. As Really Busy Rob, I want to receive attachments, JPEG, PDF, so that I can provide more specific answers and handle the moving contract in app. Features out. Cloud storage support for attachments. While it might be nice to save a contract to the cloud, open or sign it on another machine, and then send the completed contract via Mover, there are a lot of possible cloud storage systems we'd need to support to cover our customers. Dropbox, iCloud, Google Drive, OneDrive, etc. Plus, if customers want this for only contracts, we should explore providing a standard moving contract that can be created in the dashboard and signed in app, no attachments required. Designs? None yet. Open issues. Need to figure out exact success metric goal. Need to figure out exact product messaging, especially for any existing customers who could benefit from messaging now. Q&A? None yet. Other considerations? None yet.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.